rather than telling me what you're doing.
He pointed from the window at the beauty and complexity of Carr.
You'll land and leave again, without permission and without telling anyone why. And there will be another reason for everyone's distrust.
That troubled Lannery, but only a little. She was on a mission to prevent a possible system-wide catastrophe, and whether everyone in the system knew that or not, did not detract from its importance.
You deal with us, she said.
With Master Dan Powell.
Do you think I have any choice?
Tree asked.
Yes, Lannery said.
Plenty.
I'm a businessman, he said. I suppose I'm as mercenary as the Jedi in achieving my aims.
You're a criminal, Lannery said. And I didn't warn you about that turn because I needed a laugh.
The complexity of a Jedi,
Tree said, and she could not help smiling at his light tone. He annoyed her, but there was something eminently likable about Tree.
I still don't want you in that seat, she said.
He glanced across at her but did not reply. A chime from the control panel. Proximity alert. Please hold on, Tree, she said pointedly. Then she put the ship into a dive. They drifted beneath one of the wide, garden-topped buildings, dodging between the stocky feet that held the amazing structure upright. And then she turned a sharp right and quickly climbed again. The temple is a kilometer ahead. She checked the map, where the Daibendu temple was marked a hazy green.
You're really going to land on the roof?
No. Changed my mind. Too exposed.
Good.
I'm going to take us in the front door.
Tree did not even reply, but his shocked silence was enough. He grasped the seat restraints and secured them across his chest and hips. Lannery knew that this was a tricky, risky maneuver, but they needed time. They'd be far too visible on the roof of the temple, and right or wrong, she had already made the decision that there was no time to handle this through diplomatic channels. Dale and the Stargazers knew she was here, and whatever their plans, they would be accelerating them. She had to be creative. The building was low, large, rectangular, with spires on four corners and a steeply pitched roof. As Lannery lowered the peacemaker into the wide courtyard in front of the temple, she probed inside for Dale. She had no idea whether or not she'd be able to sense him, but she had to try. She was nervous, afraid of what a confrontation might bring. Another warning chime from the ship brought her around, and she realized that her concentration had been drifting. She'd almost flown them into the ground. People scattered away from the ship, dropping belongings, rushing for cover as its powerful engines kicked up violent storms of dust. Benches were blown across the courtyard. Trees were bent over and stripped of leaves. Lannery floated the peacemaker along the front of the temple until she saw its main wooden doors. Wide enough. They were closed, but the ship was tough. She nudged them forward and smashed the doors aside with the peacemaker's nose, taking a significant chunk of masonry with them. Then she settled the ship down, nose inside the temple, the body of the ship in the courtyard. Hardly inconspicuous, but she didn't plan on being here for long. Ironhulks, keep the engines powered up. We might be leaving in a hurry. Tree? Coming? He looked across at her, Leku forming a series of words that might have made his mother blush. Lannery grinned. Dale was not there. No one was. But until very recently, they had been. Inside the temple was one large central room with many smaller rooms around its edges. The main room itself was full height. The walls and ceilings extravagantly decorated, with frescoes relaying Daibendu religious tales and history. Tall windows allowing in multicolored dawn light through stained glass symbols. The nose of the peacemaker ship cooled and ticked, hull dappled with colors. The temple's ancient wooden doors smashed on the floor around it. It was in some of the smaller rooms that they found evidence of recent habitation. Sleeping rolls were scattered across the floor. Meals lay half-eaten on several long tables, cold but not congealed. Candles still burned in some of the windowless inner rooms. Here and there lay the remains of hastily smashed equipment. And in one small room, Lannery found something of Dale. "Check the other rooms," she said. "They've gone," Tree said. "Kara must have worn them." Why tell us where they are and then warn them? Check the other rooms. I need to know where they're going. Tree must have sensed something in Lannery's voice, because he did not argue, did not reply with another quip. He melted away, and she heard his footfalls echoing through the temple room. It was the smallest of things. Dale had always loved fruit, and maples were his favorite, the tangy, sweet flesh complemented by the spicy zing of many small seeds. He always chewed right down to the long core stone, and then when he finished the small fruits, he placed the stones end to end until they formed a circle. Sometimes there were only 5 or 6 making the shape, on occasion 15 or more. There were 9 now on the floor, and the circle was incomplete. If he'd left this as a sign for Lannery, he would surely have finished the circle. But the last core had been flung aside, as if he'd departed the temple in a hurry. Lannery stared at the almost circle, and wished the ends would meet. At least then, Dale might be welcoming her pursuit, and drawing her on, some sibling rivalry remaining. "Not like this," she whispered. "Not desperate." She touched one fruit stone gently, then moved around the small room. It was a mess. Clothing lay scattered across the floor. Plates were speckled with dried remnants of old food. On the stone wall, a network of metal pins showed where something had been on display. Plans? Maps? There was no way of knowing. She picked up a jacket, pressed it to her face, inhaled. But there was nothing there that she recognized. She had to know where he was going, how much information, if any, he had about those old plans, how far along the device might be. Perhaps even with the blueprints, it would be impossible to replicate Gree technology to the detail required. But there was little here to indicate anything one way or another, and Lannery felt a flush of desperation. She had come so close, and yet now Dale might be heading anywhere. Looking around the small room one more time, she tried to remember the last good times she and her brother had spent together. Her thoughts drifted this way often, usually when Dale intruded unexpectedly in her mind. She knew it was long before their journey across Tython, maybe as far back as when they were children, younger and more innocent to the truths of things. But even then, he had been different. "I should have listened to you," Lannery whispered. She had always harbored guilt about his death, because she believed it was her reveling in the Force and her determination to push him toward it that had ultimately driven him away. Now that same guilt sang in.